We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long again. Go dogs.
Go dogs. You heard the man. What's going on, Foss? It is the 100 Sanford podcast. We back in the building. Graham is coming, but I already know. Foss, hit him with it. Hit him with it. You already know what you're going to say.
Hey, man. I woke up this morning, man. Man, would you believe the dogs won again?
Again, man.
Like, damn, they lost. I don't know when the last time they lost. I can't even remember, dog. It's been so long, man.
It's been a long time.
Woke up, the dogs still undefeated. I've been saying this for how long? Like I said last week, ain't nobody gonna try. Nobody gonna try me. Nobody gonna make me wake up sad. You know, Sunday morning, and like that. Yeah, play some football, y'all. Come on now.
Yeah, you know it.
Come
what's
on.
Up, GC? You in the building?
What's up, fellas? Sorry, I'm running a little behind tonight, but
hey, I just got on, so we hey.
All right, good.
Yeah, man, we all good. We just started this show, Graham Coffee. We just, you know, again, Foss is just going with he's just doing what he normally does. Come on, start the
talking
show.
Talking that talk.
Talking that talk, and we ain't lost
talking
yet. You know what I'm saying?
Talk.
Foss, let me ask you about this t-shirt you got on real quick, bro.
Foss, baby. That's me.
Where do I get one of them, man?
Me. Well,
Foss
my Grant. My homeboy. It's not Foss Grant. Not yet. It's my homeboy, Chilio.
Okay.
Artist, philanthropist from... You know, right here in Atlanta, he makes the shirts. Sometimes you might see me in a shirt that say "Love Yourself." You might see my shirt say "Eight." If you've seen those hats with this font or those shirts with this font that say "AT Alien," that's my boy Chilio.
I have seen.
You know,
those.
And,
nice.
And so he did a short run of stuff where you could customize your shirt, your stuff. And so I said, "Hey, make one with Frost on it." You dig?
I like it. I dig it.
Yes, sir. Hey, man. Hold up, man, because you know what we got to do before we get this thing started. Thank you for joining the show, first of all. But please make sure you hit the subscribe and like button because the Sanford squad has surely taken off. And we want you to ride with us.
It's that way. Press the button. It's usually on this side, right?
Is it on that side?
At the bottom. Depends.
Then head on over to your favorite social media.
Yeah,
head on over to your favorite social media stream and do the same as we are available on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and the X. Find us and we'll find you. Lastly, head on over to Dog Central with the most comprehensive information you're going to find and unit of collaborating forces in dog sports, intel, news, interaction. Come get that dog love from some of the best out there in Dog Nation. We do what we do. Fellas, how was the home field event, man? I saw it, but yeah. How was it?
It was great, man. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. Great turnout, you know. Honestly, the turnout surpassed my expectations, truthfully.
People could do anything.
Yeah, for sure, you know. And it was awesome being up on the stage with George and John and Jim. And you know, just I thought it was a really good discussion. Alex Kirshner from Split Zone Duo led the panel, and he's a pro, and he's very good. If you if you're a Patreon on their podcast, I think the panel is up on there, and it's also up on the Dog Central YouTube channel. So check that out if you want to replay the panel. But my biggest thing was just like gratitude for the number of people that showed up and talked about like, hey, I love listening to 100 Sanford every week, or you know, I love reading this or that on Dog Central. And you know, we spend a lot of time like on these computers and these devices making content, and it was really cool to I think have some contact with the people that like are consuming it and hear their feedback, you know.
That's what's up.
It was cool.
The question I got to ask was there any panties being thrown up? Because I said, what did I say? I said, Boss is going to be there. And I wanted to know if anything.
I want some chicken fingers thrown up there.
Kane's fingers.
But it was good. We had a really good time. Like Graham said, great turnout. As people, you know, were tuned in. There was a bar side. There's the side we were on, and you know, people sat there and listened to what we had to say. You know, I mean, I could have been talking some gibberish, and they sat there and listened to me talk my gibberish, and we had a good time. Kirshner was like Graham said, he's a pro, led it really well. We enjoyed it, man. We missed you, Lamar.
Yeah, we did.
Man, look, I was sad.
Lamar was somewhere, you know, tucked up.
I was tucked up.
You know, probably eating shrimp, you know, little filet mignon.
Yes,
you
know, both.
Medallions.
And scallops. Yes, and scallops. It was good.
You know, he was somewhere, you know, doing big time stuff.
Man, when I say it was good, Foss, it was good. But here's the deal. When I was there, I was still thinking about y'all because I had this guy next to me, and he was like, oh, man, he was sweating. He was all on this. I think he was doing like prize picks or something like that. I said, look, you need to tune into the show because we'll let you know who's going to win and who's not going to win. And I told him to do the under on the Mizzou game. You guys went over, but I said, do the under. My man hit me up the next day. He said, man, I'm so happy I met you. I got a grip off of that. Thank you. I appreciate it. My wife still loved me. So it is what it is. You know what I mean?
Give you a little cut off that, man.
Nah, man. You know, ain't nobody giving you no cut. You know? I got the same amount of pennies I had the day before. Same amount of pennies. But hey, man, speaking of that Mizzou game, because I know we got our guest. We got a very, very, very special guest coming on, hopefully here in the next 15 to 20 minutes.
This is another one of my favorites.
All time faves.
There's been a you'll see. There's been kind of a theme with Graham and his running backs, and I like that we think alike. Big bruisers that can catch out if they need to.
That's right.
You know what absolutely. I mean. Absolutely. And so,
scares me.
Hey, if he got some daylight, he was out of there.
Yeah, Jack. All right, man. So look, let's talk about that Mizzou game, man. I mean, I took some hits because people kept asking me, what are you crazy? Like, you really think that score is going to be like that? I was dang near almost spot on, fellas. I mean, I missed it by a point or so. But it was what I thought it was going to be because I've been following that team all year long. And Mizzou kind of scared me a little bit.
I was 8 points off.
Yeah, you were good. You were good.
Yeah, what did the score end up being?
30 to 21.
Yeah. I had 38-21. I was off. Do you remember what you said, Lamar?
I actually had 38-30.
Okay.
Shifted. There. Yeah, and it was trending that way until they kind of both offenses kind of just like shut down a little bit. But you know, it was a game, man, where I thought that. Well, one, I wanted the defensive line to expose Mizzou, right? And we wanted them to come out that second game in a row, be forceful, do what they were needed to do to win that game. And they actually started a little bit slow. Just like the offensive line, they started a little bit slow, and then all of a sudden they picked up. Just what I thought. I said, okay, it's going to progressively get better. But what I didn't like was the beginning of that game, and I didn't want Mizzou to actually kind of get going. And they were actually getting going a little bit, man. They had Burden doing what he was doing. I think the ankle injury kind of disturbed him a little bit in terms of his route running and the things that they were able to do with him. But Mizzou just has a lot of – they just have a lot of components that they can use. They just don't have the depth. And like you said, George, you know, when they got off that plane, they still were going to have Mizzou on the front of their jersey, and all of a sudden it showed itself towards the end of the game. And along with Kirby's adjustments, along with how Sanford Stadium was rocking – it actually played into the, you know, into the hands of the dogs. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think. I think you guys were both of you at the game on Saturday.
No, Graham was. I was at the cigar bar. You know, I got there good and early. I got there.
That was all right.
I got there while you know, while who was playing Ohio State and Rutgers, Rutgers was still playing, was, you know, trying to get them to hurry up and finish,
right?
So we could turn on the dogs.
And then nobody wants to see that trash.
Yeah, but it was good, man. It was the first time in a while I got to just sit down and watch a game in its entirety. You know, I saw that. I saw that whole game. I didn't have to watch it on my phone. You know, I wasn't moving around at that moment. Of course, I had some moving around before and afterwards, but it was that game was like like you mentioned, they're Mizzou. No matter how you cut, no matter how you slice it, I don't care what type of dynamic players they have at certain positions, they're Mizzou. Teams at this moment right now, at this juncture, whatever you would call it, this era, they have to play really, really, really good, almost perfect football to beat Georgia right now. And Georgia doesn't have to. You know, you have to, and if you play perfect against Georgia, you still might lose. You know, and right now that's just the fact of the matter. You know, teams have had a couple teams have some good games against Georgia the last, you know, two years and change, and it really hasn't mattered. You know what I mean? They've lost one game since the middle of 2020. You know, so you know you got to play really good football to beat them. And you still might lose. And so that's why I'm not, you know, Missouri didn't scare me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Mizzou played as well as they could have played. And I think, like, that game to me was the perfect example of why coaches don't like to look down their schedules and see a bunch of teams that are coming off a bye week. Because – like, they broke tendencies on a lot of things, and they did it in a way that I think, you know, stressed Georgia at times. They had run stretch, I think, 9 times in the entire season coming into that game. And, you know, I mean, it felt like 2/3 of their runs in that game were just like stretch zone concepts to the outside. And I think at a certain point, Georgia kind of was like willing to, I mean, they did some interesting things, and a lot of people have talked about what they did with Lassiter, bringing him into the slot to cover Burden. But, like, Tyke Smith was, you know, he kind of was like a Sam linebacker in some ways in that game. Like, he was, you know, doing all sorts of different things in coverage, blitzing, playing the run. I think that they kind of got to a spot where it was like, okay, we'll give you some stuff on the edges, but – we're not going to let the big play up the seam happen. And if you're going to hit something on us downfield, then it's going to be to the boundary. And eventually, you know, I think Brady Cook kind of like turned into a pumpkin. You know, it got late in the fourth and midnight came, and he looked downfield and everybody was covered, and CJ Allen was leaving his spot to hit him. And that ball came out of his hands, and a big 320-pound dude with soft hands was sitting there waiting to grab it. So, like, you know, that kind of broke the game, I think, in a lot of ways. But I thought, you know, Carson, it's kind of a credit to him. From the word go, he just seemed a little off. Didn't play bad, never turned the ball over. You know, there was nothing like that. But, like,
accuracy.
There was times where I thought he was aiming the football instead of throwing the football. And, you know, even despite all that, he still puts up 250 yards. Like, that deep ball to McConkie leads straight to a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like, Georgia, you know, they're the way they've done business on offense this year has been they're one of the highest success rate teams in the country. They're extremely efficient, and they stay ahead of the sticks mostly, and they're really good on third downs if they do fall behind it. But, like, you know, more small chunks than giant explosives. And in this game, they had like 12 explosive plays, and all of those led to points except for the Dejan run on the last drive when they were kneeling out the clock. And, like, I think that's kind of a credit to Bobo and to the players on a day where Mizzou was doing some things to make it harder for them to kind of operate the way they normally do. they found other ways to score and to go get enough points to win that game.
Bro, adjustments. They're the best at adjustments. I mean, when it comes down to it,
nobody adjusts better.
Nobody. It's impossible. I mean, you could, I don't care what team you have. And like Foss, you were watching Ohio State, you know, against Rutgers. I watch a lot of football now. I mean, I really, truly do, just because my son loves watching it. So we just watch games all the time. I don't see anybody adjusting the way Georgia adjusts. And when it comes down to it, when you know, people talk about the college football playoff rankings, right? And they had, I don't know if it was the commissioner, one of the guys from the committee was on the other day talking about it. And they were asking, you know, what do you look at? Do you look at the body of work? Do you look at the record? Do you look at what's going on? And he said, you know, we look at everything. But I guarantee you, one thing that they do look at is that even if Georgia starts off slow, they finish strong. Even if they start strong, they still, you know, close it out. And it's the way that they do so by adjustments, by just basically doing whatever they want to do to teams. I mean, Foss, you said it before. They choke teams out for the last couple of years. The difference is this year, they slowly choke you out. Like they almost like put you in a you know, in a little choke hold. They just say, come on, breathe a little bit, and then let it go and then breathe a little bit more. Then choke you out, you know, at the very end. I mean, it's a weird dynamic. And so one of the things I never worry about in a game, whether if they're starting off slow or starting off hot, is the adjustment that's going to be at halftime. You know, what Kirby and those guys are going to do, because they'll either protect their players through the adjustments, right? Or they'll turn it up a notch to blow teams out and do what they do. And you started seeing with, you know, with Dejon Edwards running the ball effectively, that defense really got loose. And I think they really started off getting hot when Tyke Smith came in on that blitz and dang near took his back out.
That was a huge play. Was that the only way I'd hold my breath for a flag? Because it just seems those type of hits always – like garner a flag, even when they're legal.
It does for everybody else.
I was so glad that they did not throw a flag on that one.
Facts. And then you had the pups. Then you had the pups, man. You had Jalen Walker. You know what I mean? You had Julian Humphrey step up. And on a day that Everett was having a tough day to start, you know, you bring in Julian Humphrey and all of a sudden, you know, and even he had a couple, you know, little bumps in the road. You know, I think he got one of the flags, but turned it up a notch. And when
that flag was so
bogus.
Yes, man.
That was one of the worst PIs I've ever seen. Actually, yeah. You know, no exaggeration.
Yeah. This team did a lot, man. I mean, it showed a lot. And I think that's why it was a good test against a good, well coached football team. I think that's probably the best coach football team that they played so far this year, along with talent and a team coming in that was going to stretch you in different ways. They could stretch you in terms of running the football, like Graham already talked about, you know, hitting those edges. Because again, where's Georgia had trouble setting the edge? They didn't have so much trouble this past game. You know, what did they have trouble with? Shutting down a top flight receiver. Didn't have any trouble this game, you know, along with Weiss on the outside, right? Because they still got Weiss, and Theo Weiss didn't get off. It was one of those games where I think Georgia really showed itself. And I forgot to mention Oscar Delp. Again, another young pup who's stepping in for Brock Bowers, and Delp is doing his thing. I'm impressed. That's all I could say. I'm impressed because that was the game that I looked forward to seeing and seeing if we could make those adjustments.
Yeah. I was impressed with the – I didn't like them giving up that many yardage, that much yardage to Schrader. But I still think the defense did pretty good. I don't know what Mizzou Graham may know on what Mizzou has been averaging points wise this season.
I'll tell you.
But to hold them to 21,
that's a good offense, man.
And Brady Cook was under 50% passing, 2 interceptions. You know what I mean? To do that to him, the best thing he did was some of the escaping from the pocket that he did. And and so they held it down. They did. I'm fine with that defensive effort.
Well, I mean,
Missouri was averaging 33.7 points a game.
Yeah. So you got held over 10, like 12 points under your average.
What is the stat? I wonder if you know this, Graham, or if anybody knows this. when you walk into Athens Stadium, I mean, into Sanford and Athens, what exactly, how far do you drop in terms of your points per game?
I don't know that. But
it's got to be astounding.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it is. I mean, it's also like just when you walk onto a field with a bunch of five-star athletes that play defense for Kirby Smart. But, yeah, no, that, I mean, I'm going to say this and probably shouldn't, to be honest with you, but I'm just going to keep it a buck. I thought the crowd was not super into the game at times on Saturday. I thought like late into the game, you know, third and fourth quarter when that game got tight and people got loud, but like there were a lot of times early in the game where Mizzou had the ball and it just felt kind of like, you know, like there was just like sort of a murmur in there. You know what I mean? It wasn't like the usual roar that you experience where everybody's yelling. So I don't know. I think that's something that they're going to, you know,
I think it's
fans need to step up.
I think one, it's Mizzou. it's still
they're number 12 in the country. You know what I mean?
They're still Mizzou. It's Mizzou. It was homecoming. It was, you know, I tell you what won't happen this Saturday. That won't be the case. that won't be the case this Saturday. You know, the lane effect. People want to agitate that guy. They want to beat more that guy really bad. And I think
night game
is gonna be ridiculous down there this weekend.
Are you going?
I don't know yet. I'd be having stuff to do, but if I can make it, it'd be a good one to make it too. I'll tell you where I am going.
Where?
Hey, I gotta make sure I got my reinforcements with me. I'm going to Rocky Top for the first time.
Ooh.
As a fan.
Ugh. Nice.
You know, of course I've played up there. It's the most ridiculous place in college football to me. You know, especially when they're good. If they give that crowd something to scream about, you're talking about 110,000 going nuts. When I say nuts, Hobnail boot game, loudest place I've ever been in my life. Period.
I believe it.
it's absurd up there. So take that ride up there. So hopefully the Dawgs take care of business this weekend and go up there. Let me talk my stuff.
Foss, check your phone, Foss. I just sent you something you're going to like. Just check your phones, a text message. You know, fellas, we talk a lot of stuff. And but one thing about us, we always have the hottest guests. We have the hottest guests in the industry. Ain't no doubt about it. Because one thing about it, whenever there is a game that we're playing against a, you know, one of our rivals or something like that, we should show respect and bring on the best from that team, right? So we're going to do what we do. And Foss, I want you to do the introduction because this dude here is one of the great greats. Again, my son, I nicknamed Deuce. He don't even know why I nickname him Deuce, but his nickname is Deuce. And I'm going to show him this interview. And I'm going to go back and show him some highlights. He's going to be like, oh, snap. Okay, I'm ready to go now. But yeah. I'm going to do him right, Foss. I'm going to put on some theme music for him because I'm going to do it right. I'm going to do it right. And then you introduce him and bring him in, okay?
It's my guy. Hey, listen up. We got the great, the incomparable Deuce McAllister. You know, straight from Ole Miss. We got the great, the legendary New Orleans Saint. You know, just an all-around baller. My man. We go back a long way playing dominoes in the country. Having a good old time. There you go.
Boss, as soon as I heard my theme music, I just froze up. I mean, it just went out.
There you go, man. The legendary Deuce McAllister, man. Y'all tune in, man. We got my guy on here, man. Hey, see you in a minute, man. I need to bust your head at some dominoes right quick.
Well, hey, we can definitely slam them bones, no doubt about that. I mean, that's all the time. Boss, I've been trying to stay out of the way, man. Just trying to chase these kids and just try to stay out of the way. But everything's good, though. I hope you gentlemen are doing well.
Man, we appreciate you coming on. We never take it for granted the guests that decide to grace us with their presence, especially legends like yourself. We playing your boys this weekend. You know, there's only one loss between both teams. So this is going to be a great game. It's in Athens. What you think, man? What you think?
I would feel a lot better if it was in Oxford. I can tell you that. I mean, you know, anytime that you have to go on the road, you can talk about just being able to say, hey, look, we're playing the opponent. But you're playing more than an opponent. You're playing the crowd. You have to be able to handle the crowd. You have to be able to handle the emotions, the swings, the ups and downs of a game. And so that's a concern. That's one of the concerns. The biggest concern is the talent that's on the field. And so there's an abundant amount of talent for Georgia. And so now you handle the crowd a little bit. Now can you handle the team? And so you talk about one of the toughest tasks that this team is going to be going up against. That's definitely it. And when you compare it, it's really like going to Alabama earlier this year. And in that game, Ole Miss really didn't handle that game well. And so you talk about being able to have at least your feet wet and you're in a little bit more experience. So you hope you're better prepared for that situation now that you will get, you know, a top tier or the best, in my opinion, team in the country.
Hey, Deuce, I got a quick question for you. I mean, what do you like about this Ole Miss team? And what don't you like? I mean, you talked about, you know, if it was in Oxford, you'd like it a little bit more. But what do you not like about, I mean, outside of just having to go and play against the crowd, but what do you not like about your actual chances?
Well, I mean, anytime that you play at home, you can be a lot more relaxed. You know, I don't have to worry about sleeping in a hotel that I'm familiar with, you know, and then when things aren't going well, the crowd won't get as loud. You know, there may be some boos if you're dealing with your home crowd, but it's not going to be a frenzy, you know. And so, you know, that with every mistake, it gets a little bit harder because things aren't going to go your way. And so that's for any team that's playing at home. And so it's the comfort. You know, I know the locker room. I know how many steps it takes to get to the field. All of that will be different. And then the other thing is, it's not like you play in Athens every year. A little bit different when you're playing against a team from the West, because you know what the locker room looks like. You know where you're going to stay. This is totally new for this team to be able to go to Athens and, you know, you walk in between the hedges and it's kind of like you look around and it's like, whoa. You know, and so that takes some adjustments. So the first thing really for this team, for Ole Miss, you have to survive the first quarter. Can you survive the first quarter? I would not be one bit surprised. And Lane is already he's a guy that likes to gamble on fourth down and things of that nature. So I would not be surprised one bit for some type of trick play, some type of, hey, look, it's fourth and short. Normally Lane's going to go for it anyway. That's just his mentality. But in this situation where you know there will be a limited amount of snaps for you, he's probably going to be even more aggressive. I like that you have an older quarterback. The older quarterback, you know, has handled the situation really, really well this year. And I think there's still even more for Jackson Dart to be able to do. You know, he does really well as far as moving in the pocket. He is the quarterback that can run the football. And the other thing that I think that Ole Miss has to be able to, they have to be able to exploit some of the matchups, mismatches when they have them. There won't be a lot of them, but when you have a mismatch, you've got to be able to exploit it.
What do you think is different about this team at this point in the season than maybe when they went into Tuscaloosa and had a tough day there?
Defense is playing a lot better. I mean, if you're going to be honest, that's probably the thing that Ole Miss has been able to lean its head on a little bit and say, hey, look, our defense is more experienced. They play a lot of young guys, but here's the thing as well in today's college football, they take a lot of transfer portal kids, a ton of transfer portal kids. And so for me, it's always, hey, will they come together? That was one of the biggest concerns with the offensive line, where I felt like that they were not playing really well early on. It's hard. It is very hard when you talk about 18-year-old, 19-year-olds playing together. I mean, you probably have one of Judkins. He's all American running back, and he wasn't getting 50 yards. And everybody's like, "Well, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with him?" Well, you look at the new starters that you have up front blocking with him, you know. And so that takes time. And then you also have a new offensive line coach that takes time. And so they've matured a little bit more up front. They kind of know and understand what they want to do, what they're trying to do. And now it's just giving them, you know, the quarterback protection and then be able to try to create some run lanes for Judkins, you know, so he can try to do his thing.
I think the West is like, is sneaky becoming more competitive, you know, top to bottom. You know, not necessarily the bottom. You know, Mississippi State is still struggling. But
it's NIL.
Yeah,
it's NIL because here's the deal. A young man that would go and have to wait his time, he can go somewhere now where they can kind of offer me a little bit of funding, but also some playing time. And so now you don't have some of the upper tier elite teams that has three All-Americans just waiting back to back to back. Now, at certain positions, that may be the case, but normally that's not the case. And here's the other thing that is so different, and so many people don't get it. The college game is different from the NFL game. One, it's about players. I mean, any coach will always tell you it's the Jimmys and Joes. I can call the best play, but if I don't have players to execute it, you know, you're joking yourself. It's about the Jimmys and Joes. So I have those, and then do I have a quarterback that can get me into the right plays and make it right? If you don't have really those two, then you have to have an elite play caller offensively as well as defensively, and sometimes even defensively, that may not be enough. I mean, because if they can score enough points and you don't get the touches, it doesn't matter.
So this really leads to my question. With you guys, you're 8-1, right?
Yes.
The 8-1, Bama is what, 8-1?
Bama's the loss.
And they're 8-1 too, right?
Yeah, so but Bama has the head-to-head.
And then LSU is, they got two losses?
Three.
Yeah, three losses now.
Three losses. Who else is in the West? Texas A&M?
Yeah,
take the race out, take this year's race out of it. It seems like it's almost getting kind of even over there. You know what I mean? Where it's kind of a toss up. Of course, Bama still has, they still have, you know, at this moment, the greatest coach,
correct,
college coach of all time. You know, he's the X factor for that team. You know, that team. I don't think after that Texas game, I don't think many people had them still being only with one loss right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're playing better than they should probably, and that's because of the head man. But at the same time, they're beatable. You know what I mean? What do you think it'll take for Ole Miss, you know, to hop up in that top spot now? Because it feels like this might be the time, you know, where you can put all your eggs in that basket and go, you know, get you some dogs and compete for that West.
You know what I mean? You want the political correct answer, or you want the truth?
Dude, this is 100%. We
have 100% for the truth. But Ole Miss been getting some ballers now. They got, you know,
how deep are your pockets? That's my question. That's what it's going. I mean, but that's today's game. How deep are your pockets?
Yeah.
Can you recruit defensive linemen that can get after the quarterback, and can you get a quarterback year in and year out that can get you to the top? That's what it is.
You know football.
Yeah.
Because that's a big deal.
Yeah, if you get them, got the big dogs, yeah, up front, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
I can scheme the other stuff. That is what you cannot scheme. There are only so many 6'4", 6'5", guys that can get to the quarterback. Everything else is, you know, you're painting a pretty picture. That's all it is. And so now the way that NIL is structured, if you can be able to say, hey, look, we have 13, 14 million dedicated to football, and we want to go get the top players. Can we go get 3 boy dogs that can get after the quarterback? And if you can go to give, you can do that. You give yourself a chance.
You know what, Deuce? It's funny that you said it. That was one of the questions I had. I always have an NIL question for the guests. But then I had to go back and look at what is Ole Miss doing in terms of recruiting. So right now, Ole Miss has 5 of the top 10 kids from Mississippi,
yep,
all high 4-stars, 5-stars. Last year, the top 2 kids in Mississippi. But when you go back, they did not have that prior to NIL. What is the shift and what is the thinking and mentality at Ole Miss in terms of, are they going to pony up to help Lane and continue this thing going? Or is it just going to be, well, we'll see how this thing shakes out. We'll give a little here, give a little there, and you know, see if Lane can do something with it. What's your thoughts?
And before Deuce answers, and I say that's important too, because a state like Mississippi, it doesn't have a whole lot of people. So per capita, they have like some of the top guys in it. They're one.
Yes.
NFL guys per capita. Yeah. So like if you're getting the top Mississippi guys,
yeah,
that's a big deal.
You give yourself a chance when you do that. And so that's the biggest thing. Here's what it boils down to. Do you want to say that you can on average win 9 games or 10 games, or you want to just say, hey, look, we're going to win 7 games and we'll be happy? And so you have some alumni that have committed, you know, and hey, look, if you want to play with the big boys, that's what it's going to take. That's what it's going to take. And that's just being honest. And like Foss was saying, Foss, if you can get the top 3 or 4 guys that, you know, hey, look, this guy has potential to play in the NFL, we've got to develop him. But if we can keep him for at least 4 years, then we've got a shot. If we can keep him for 3 years, really, because if we're doing what we're supposed to do, that kid's going to go on to the NFL after 3 years. And then can you convince a kid from Georgia or Florida that UGA doesn't want, that Florida can't take this year because they've got 3 studs already at that position? He may not be a 5-star. He may be a high 3-star. Now you got to develop a kid. Evan Ingram was from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
George, UGA didn't want Evan Ingram. You know, Florida didn't want Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram's in the NFL right now. You know, he's in the NFL right now. So there are players like that. Laramie Tunsil. Laramie Tunsil, we all know the story. I mean, don't kid yourself. That was a kid that changed the trajectory of the program in Oxford.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't win the big game, but it got you to the Sugar Bowl where you hadn't been since the 1950s. So, I mean, you're going to have to get players like that, and you've got to identify them. You've got to be able to say, hey, look, I have some type of relationship with you. And with the NIL package, you know, you can go out and compete. You can't do that every year because there's only so many funds that are available in Mississippi. But at the same time, if you can identify those 3 or 4 players that can turn a program around and give you a chance, that's all you could ask for.
And it's interesting you speak about the 3-stars. And Graham has said these stats before. Like, that's what Georgia does. People think, yeah, Georgia, yeah, they're going to have top 1-2 classes every year under Kirby. But Georgia also, what do you say, is
a quarter of their 3-stars under Kirby have been drafted. Now, I mean, they're only friggin' 5 or 6 a class, right? They're not having 25 3-stars in a class, but they're really good at evaluating them and then developing.
That's crazy. What's the average? Is like what, 3-4%?
5-6%. Yeah.
And Georgia is putting
3-stars nationally.
And Georgia, 25% of Georgia 3-stars are going to getting drafted.
But when you look at across the NFL, look at the guys that make the roster, it's normally 3-stars. Now, you will have your five-star player that does make a roster, but it's normally going to be three-star guys that, you know, make out an NFL player. I mean, and so it's about identifying. You got to identify some of that talent. But I agree with you, Graham. You can't have 25 three-star players and expect to be able to win 9-10 games, you know, and that's just being able to say, hey, look, we like this kid. This kid maybe went to a program that didn't have some of the resources. It may, you know, it may have been the wrong offense for that kid, wrong defense for him. He may have been a basketball player for 3 years, and then he wanted to play football. So it's just identifying a kid and just having a vision for him in your program.
Well, so, I mean, it seems like Lane, maybe as much as anybody in the SEC, is using the portal and – it seems to be kind of proud of it, right? Like, I think he started calling himself the Portal King a couple of years ago. So, you know, how does that kind of work in with the sort of the long range vision for the program in terms of, you know, building those high school classes around the guys that have already played somewhere else?
That's one of the toughest jobs that I think that he is faced with. I mean, because it's a difference when I'm dealing with grown men in the NFL, because that's just free agency. Now you have free agency with 18, 19 year olds. And now how is the mesh? I being able to do the broadcast for ESPN, being able to go in and talk to some of the players. You had some kids that would tell you, hey, look, I'm here for 6 months and I'm going to the NFL. I respect it. You know, I understand it. You know, I respect that because that's the mentality. But if you're bringing in all hired assassins, then it's tough, because when things aren't going well early on, what's going to happen? They're going to check out.
Soft and tissue injuries, baby.
Yeah, soft tissue injuries. They're going to check out because my time, I only have, you know, 4 more Mondays here. I only have 5 more Mondays here. I'm gone. And so you just have to make sure that you're recruiting and getting the right guys in when you do play the transfer portal game. But that's one that he knows that he has to be able to do, just because you don't have the pure numbers as some of the other elite teams. I mean, you just don't have those numbers. And so if you have to develop year in and year out, you can do it at some positions, but some positions you aren't going to be able to do it.
You know, Deuce, we talk about culture a lot at Georgia. I mean, Kirby has built a phenomenal culture where not only that, he can get the 5-star, he can get the 3-star, no matter who the guy is, no matter how big his head is, when he comes to Georgia, all of a sudden it gets shrunk down, then he builds him back up. Yep. What's the culture like right now at Ole Miss under Lane Kiffin? Because it's always assumed that Lane's a, you know, he's a wild card. You never know what's going on. You never know what's going on in his head. And like Graham said, how do you get to that point? What is the culture down there in Oxford?
Well, the one thing that he has, and he uses this word a lot, it's a pro mindset. And so if you have aspirations of going to the next level, that's what he's able to sell you on. And it's having that pro mindset. And then he builds that roster, even though we came up totally different, where it's 4 or 5 years on the roster. He builds his roster. Hey, look, this is a 2-year plan with this player. This is a 3-year plan with this player. And so having that vision for that player and the player knowing it going in, then I think that really helps to set the tone. But it's always going to be about, do I have the right guy at quarterback? And then do I have the right coaches? I mean, because even you guys know it. If your coach is about building a program and the vision for me is to say, hey, look, you know, 1 year we may have a short-term plan where we may bring in 4 transfers at that position, and that coach is looking like, well, I can't teach that. I can't coach that. Then you probably got the wrong guy. You know, and so I think it starts with having the right staff and understanding what those guys want from a staff standpoint, and then being able to fill in the blanks of where you know you're weak and where you have to hide some of your deficiencies.
Do you feel like, just say you do take the next step and get those dogs up front on both sides, do you think Lane is a guy that, you know, that can take that and do something with it? Or you feel like you're unsure at this moment? Because to me, it seems like he's been all over the place.
Yeah.
But this might be the best job he's done. I don't know, Graham, you know,
From a long-term standpoint. Right. A couple things that helped Ole Miss. And you know, for me, I felt that, and this is my opinion, not knowing for sure, I could probably, if I really dug into it, Lane was probably going to Auburn last year. You know, I felt strongly about that. What helped Ole Miss and what is so interesting is It was his kids. It was his younger kids that probably swayed it. Now, yes, Ole Miss stepped up to the plate and offered the money that he was probably going to look for. And even in Oxford or in the state of Mississippi, here's something interesting. You guys, I don't know if you know it, but in the state of Mississippi, the longest a contract can be for any coach is 4 years.
Oh, I didn't know.
That's state law.
Wow. Hmm.
That's state law.
Big deal.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the Ole Miss athletic department, their foundation got creative and guaranteed him some additional years on his contract. So this was outside of what the state did, and they were able to bump him up. And so that gave him kind of, I don't want to call it on par, but it was close to on par what he was going to potentially make at Auburn. So once they were able to get creative with the funding and match the number that he wanted and committed to say, hey, look, we will, if your number is 15 million of what we have to have for NIL for you, we will do that. We will match your salary obligations. All of that's out the way. Now, what do you want to do? It was the kids that probably were the final sway to say, Dad, we want to stay here. Listen. We like it. My youngest daughter had just started. He has another daughter that I think she may be a freshman now. So it was the kids that kind of had the final say of like, we don't want to move again. We like this place. Dad, do we have to go?
And if you keep it in a book, we keep it. How would he do? It's 100 Sanford. So we keep it. So we keep it 100. The last decade or so before NIL, Ole Miss was tossing some change around because you get a Tunsil, you get
Treadwell.
Talked about Condici. I mean, I just talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, so like if you get those guys, so I imagine with NIL, that might bump up some more. But at the same time, you are competing with other teams too. But I feel like Ole Miss has potential to get scary.
Well, here's the thing: you need the 12 game playoff. You need that just because you won't have the overall depth and the numbers of some of the other elite teams. So if you can, you know, hey, look, I can be a number 9, I can be a number 8 seed, I can get into the playoffs in that way, then, Foss, as you know, I mean, any given Saturday, anything can happen. So like 9 out of 10 times, no, I may not beat you, but man, you got your left tackle out, your cornerback is hurt, your tight end is banged up. I might have a chance, and you know, after 12, 13 games in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're just talking about a 14 playoffs, and yeah, every 20 plus years, it may happen for you, you know, but the more that they add, the more of a chance, a legitimate chance you have to be able to get in there, you know, and it may not be every year, but you should, you know, 2 out of 5 years, you should be able to get in there.
You know, go ahead, Graham.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of just touched on like the once in every 20 years. And, you know, I mean, when you guys were playing, there was no playoff. It was, you know, two teams at the end of the year. Yeah. You're from Mississippi, like, you know, I'm sure you were recruited by lots of schools. Like, why was it Ole Miss for you?
This is when you start to show your age, like Foss. for myself, I wanted my family to be able to see me play. So we weren't, you know, we were a middle class family, but it wasn't like that, you know, we had a bunch of money. And so I had an older brother and 2 younger sisters, and I visited official visits. I visited Miami. I visited Notre Dame. I visited Tennessee. I went to Mississippi State, Ole Miss, unofficial to Alabama. So all of the bigger schools, Georgia, you know, we talked, but at the same time you had Edwards, and, you know, I knew they were recruiting Jasper Sanks. And so Georgia was probably going to be a little tougher for me. And for myself, it was, all right, how can my family still be able to come and see me play? If ESPN today was, if we had that like it is today, 20 years ago, I would have went to Miami. Oh, wow. I would have been in Miami. I would have Edrin James, James Jackson, McGahee. You know, that's the crew that I was with. I mean, that's the crew that I was with. Edge was one of the guys down there that was trying to get me to go. I was I visited with Santana Moss, you know, and so I loved it. But the problem was And if you guys remember, Notre Dame, they were one of the only ones that was on TV. And if you were not the 11:30 game, Jefferson Pilot, or if you were not just a regular, 3:30 game, who would see you?
Yeah.
And so for my family, it was about 2.5 hours from Ole Miss. Ole Miss had a senior running back, John Avery, who went on to play in the NFL. That was really probably the only competition. Mississippi State had three other backs that I would have had to compete with. But for me, it was an opportunity to play early and then my family to be able to come and see me play.
You know, Deuce, the way the game is now shaping up, I mean, you got Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC. You got USC and UCLA joining the big 85 up there up north. You know, what are your thoughts on how the college football is shaping up? Because some people feel like a lot of the pageantry is going to be gone. Some people don't like the NIL. Some people don't like the shift. What are your thoughts overall in terms of the game of college football?
The money in the game is the difference. I mean, it's hard for, I mean, if you're being honest, how can administration look at a young man and say, hey, look, thank you for all you're doing. This education is really all we can offer you, even though we just added and we have a swimming pool, indoor swimming pool now in the facility. We have an indoor slide now in the facility. Oh, guess what? We have a barbershop, but all we can offer you is room and board and a scholarship. And oh yeah, I forgot that coach, he's making $8.5 million this year. That's wrong. Right. When universities are bringing in on average, when Oklahoma and Texas come in the first year, yes, the number will be probably roughly 50-ish, maybe 60. But year two of that deal, each university will bring in from the SEC network / ESPN $75 million. $75 million from TV alone. Zero gate, zero bowl money, zero sponsorship. We're talking just TV. Guess how much the player is expected to get from that? Zero. That's not right. That's not right. That's not right. So I'm okay with NIL. Do I think NIL should be capped? Yes. Right now it's the Wild Wild West. You know, college is worse than the NFL. Even the NFL has a salary cap. College doesn't have a salary cap. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got the right alumni and they're hungry, go buy a team. Now you need the coach to be able to, you know, do what he does, but go buy a team. It happened in baseball. It happened in women basketball, and I'm not knocking they did it. They won. They were exciting. But if you can go do it, go do it. Texas A&M right now. They can't win, but they're buying the best that money could buy. So there needs to be a cap. There needs to be a cap on NIL. And then as far as teams moving, they're moving to the money. They're moving where the TV dollar is going to be guaranteed. Now, here's the problem. You're for the student athlete to be able to be a student athlete, but you have me traveling from the West Coast to the East Coast for a 3-hour game. Make it make sense. It doesn't make sense. And so now I'm still supposed to be able to say, yes, education comes first. Well, apparently it doesn't. The dollar comes first. And so we don't know what will happen for that. The one thing that I don't want it to happen is legislation to get involved. And now we sure enough got a mess when you get the federal legislation involved with it. It'll be who knows what it'll be. But, you know, yes, it does lose some of the glamour when you don't have some of the traditional games that you've always had being played. But at the end of the day, you know, teams, universities, they're going after the paycheck.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got another question before we get ready to get you up out of here. We know we've already taken so much of your time, but we have a guy that's from Mississippi, Branson Robinson. I don't know if you had a chance to watch Branson when he was in high school.
Branson. I know Branson. He got hurt this past year. Branson is a grown man. Branson is a power lifter in a little man's body. I mean, and so I know some of his family as well. A really, really good kid, too. And I hate that, you know, he got banged up, got hurt this year. I mean, but he is a phenomenal young man. And you guys had N'Kobe Dean as well. N'Kobe just hurt his foot up in with the Eagles. And I know he even played with a bad shoulder over there. I mean, but look, how can you say that if I'm an elite recruit and look at what UGA has done, even in the past before the championships, I would have to look long and hard and to say, man, that might be the right situation for me. And that's just being honest.
Well, we're going to ask you before you get up out of here, though. We need a prediction. We usually ask all of our guests a prediction on the game. It's going to be about 55 degrees. It's going to be a little bit rainy. But like you said, your boys are traveling from Oxford up to Athens. What is your thoughts on this game overall in terms of what's going to happen and your final score prediction?
Ole Miss has to create turnovers. They have to be able to create turnovers, and I'm not talking just one. You've got to be able to steal probably 2 to 3 extra possessions. You've got to be able to do that. And then the other thing is when you get a chance in the red zone particularly, you've got to cash in. I don't see field goals being able to win this game for you. Even when you talk about having some explosive plays, vertical, Ole Miss can beat you vertical. They have some older, experienced receivers on the outside, so they've got to hit some vertical shots. For them, you've got to have the running the football. Even if it's raining and wet, that's got to be play in your favor. Now, you go back to last week, you look at the film, the stretch play is what hurt UGA last week. I don't think that's going to be the same case this week. I think that you'll see some adjustments, but trust me, Ole Miss is going to try to see, hey, look, can we run that same or something similar type of stretch play? And then the other thing that Ole Miss likes to do, they like to run the quarterback. And so Jackson Dart, he's got to be a guy that, hey, when it's time to run, I can go get some positive yards. Stopping Georgia, you can always say, hey, look, outside, how can we win on the edge? Georgia just has speed. They got a ton of speed. And then the quarterback has gotten better and better. And so the question becomes, how can I confuse them a little bit? And how can I at least get some pressure to get them off schedule? And so for Ole Miss, if you don't create the extra turnovers, it's going to be very, very tough to win. And that's just being honest. And so if it's a win, it's one close in the end that Ole Miss is able to win by 3 or something like that. You know, if not, then I think Georgia, you know, is able to go up and they just are able to use that brute force that you've seen them use against so many teams.
What scares you the most? Like, I mean, you know, for Ole Miss, what do you think is the biggest concern in this game from a matchup standpoint? What unit would you worry about?
Can Ole Miss stop the run? Can Ole Miss slow down the run? I mean, it's not necessarily stop it. Can you slow it down? I think that's probably the biggest thing, because now if you can't slow that down, you're putting your corners and your safeties in one-on-one situations. And, you know, even though Brock isn't available, you still got the number one tight end in the world, you know, that's just been sitting and waiting. He may not be the number one in the U.S., but he's the number one in the world. He's just been sitting and waiting. And so it's just like it's talent upon talent just waiting on their turn. And so, but what I'm saying, and so if you can't stop the run with 7.5 in the box, now I'm going to one-on-ones on the outside and receivers and tight ends. Those guys have an opportunity to eat. Ole Miss has older corners, so they won't be afraid of the one-on-one matchups, but I don't see them winning consistently on the outside.
Facts. Well, Deuce, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you blessing the show. You're a legend. You know, Graham was talking about you're all one of his all-time favorites. Obviously, one of my all-time favorites. But I tell you what, you did scare me when you played, because you never smiled, Deuce. You just never smiled. You just always ripping off big runs. You was big, strong, physical, and you never smiled. That's scary, bro.
Well, it was because I was always tired. And so I'm not going to go wasting some energy jumping up and doing no need to even smile. And so you had a job to do, but I always loved playing against Georgia because you knew that was just like playing against an NFL team. And if you had any success against a team like Georgia or even an LSU and Alabama, then you could do it at the next level. And so, you know, we didn't get to play a lot. But it was, you know, it was just twice against UGA. And it was just like, man, if I have success against them, then I could possibly do it on the next level.
I feel like you had a big run against us one of those years. Did you have like a 90, like a super long run against
yeah,
us?
Yeah, it was an 80 yarder, and we
80 yard. Yeah, I was looking. I was looking at the history of that game before we logged on. I don't know why I thought y'all beat us before, but we didn't. You 96 or 97?
97. So the year before, they won in Athens. The year before,
okay, so I got 96. There,
yeah, they won in Athens the year before I got there. And so here's something that's weird. I think it was Kirby's first year or his first loss was in Oxford.
Yeah. And yeah, they got killed.
Yeah. But it was what's the name had just gotten hurt. One of the star running backs. I can't think of which one run it. I mean, because there's been a ton of them. He's in the league right now, but he had just got hurt, and that was the first that was his first loss.
Who, Zeus?
No, he's
it wasn't Zeus.
We're talking probably Chubb or
something. Yeah, I think it was Nick. I think Nick had just got hurt.
Yeah.
Nick had just got hurt.
Yeah, that was a 45-14 game. They put it on.
Woo.
Chad Kelly went like 18-24 or something like that.
So what he's really saying is that Ole Miss is the reason that Georgia took off the way that they took off. So we're gonna apply
they hadn't slowed down. They hadn't slowed down since
Only program that only SEC program that Kirby has not beaten as the head coach of Georgia is Ole Miss.
Oh wow.
Really? I didn't know that.
They don't play them that often.
This is the first time they played since 2016.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, Deuce, we appreciate you. We thank you again for blessing the show. You know, tell everybody what you're up to so they can make sure that they follow you. I know you're down in New Orleans, so let us know.
Yeah, so I do the radio broadcast for the Saints radio. I've been doing it for 9 years, and so you can always catch me doing all the Saints games. And normally you can catch me SEC Network as well, ESPN, calling some of the college games also. So just a variety of different things. You may even hear me on the radio or TV sometimes calling some men's and women's basketball games. So I've dabbled a little bit in all of that. And so I love sports. And so you never know. The only one that I've been asked to do is baseball, and I told him, look, man, it's been a long time since I called a baseball game, and I don't want to embarrass, you know, the pitchers or the hitters, just being able to talk that, but I love sports.
All right, brother. Awesome. We appreciate it, and you know, again, much blessings, and continue to do what you do.
No problem. I appreciate it. I got to shout out my buddy, Mike White, the coach over there at UGA, a good guy. And so, you know, good luck to Mike. I know the season has just started. I'm pulling for him. I hope he has a bunch of success over there.
Indeed. Yes.
All right.
Appreciate it, fellas.
All right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Fellas.
Legend.
Legend.
Absolute legend. Yeah, that was epic.
Yeah, man. You know, again, I love talking to guys that played the game but could also convey the game. You know, Foss, obviously, you know, you do what you do. You just that dude. But when we bring on guests and they can actually talk this thing, you know, we had Freddie T on a couple weeks ago. You know, now you get a guy like Deuce who can come on and actually talk the game and really, really break it down. You could tell he's not one of those guys that left his university and doesn't follow it. He understands what's going on, you know, has his finger on the pulse of what's going on in Oxford. So that was an excellent interview. But let's break it down. I mean, let's talk about this. Let's give our thoughts on this, because I know Deuce is going to have some his own little thoughts on the game. And you know, he understands his team, but we also do some evaluations ourselves. So what's going on, Graham? What you got?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you were talking about how he loves his team. Like, that school loves him, man. You know, I mean, like, Ole Miss went through some pretty bleak seasons of football before he arrived. And, you know, I mean, they never were a 10-win team when he was there under Cutcliffe. Well, they were with Eli, I think, in Eli's last year. But, I mean, like, you know, he laid the foundation for a lot of stuff that's come after. And I think he's the only player in the history of the program with 3 seasons with 1,000 all-purpose yards. Like, and if you go to Oxford and you talk to Ole Miss fans, like, if his name comes up, they will, you know, they won't stop talking about how much they love Mr. McAllister there. So,
Yeah, he's deserved that. He's no longer Deuce. He's Mr. McAllister.
Absolutely. Yeah, we should have started the show that way. Yeah, there's few programs that, like, I think treat their legends quite like Ole Miss does. And you got the Mannings, and then you got Deuce right there. Like,
yep.
That's it.
Yeah. All right, fellas. Well, we got Saturday coming into Athens, 7 p.m. Like I already mentioned, 55 degrees, some slight rain. You got Ole Miss coming in, 8-1, under Lane Kiffin. You know, Lane's going to do what Lane's going to do. You don't know what he's going to do. He's going to be a wild card. But, fellas, it's a team that, you know, ranked number 10 in the country, I guess number 9 in college football playoffs, top wins, LSU, Texas A&M. But like Deuce already mentioned, Jackson Dart, he's been slinging that thing all over the field, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He's also been able to run the ball pretty effective when needed. Trey Harris has had a good year in terms of at the wideout position. You got Judkins, the running back, 12 touchdowns. He can be explosive when he needs to. And they've been opportunistic on defense. But I'm waiting to hear what Graham's going to say because, I mean, I did some digging myself, so I can't wait for him to break out some stats. But I did some digging, Graham. What you got, baby?
Let's get into it. All right. So shout out – oh my God. I'll give you a proper shout out momentarily when I find your name. But someone on Twitter earlier today in my replies brought up the home and away splits for Ole Miss. All right, Ole Miss has gone on the road 3 times this year. First time to Tulane down there in New Orleans. Hard fought game that they came out with a win. Then they went to Tuscaloosa, recently played at Auburn a couple weeks back, 28-21 victory. All right. Red zone touchdown percentage for Ole Miss at home, 71%. On the road, 45%. Third down conversion percentage at home, 46%. On the road, 15%.
Ooh, that's nasty.
SS.
That's nasty. You're going to get waxed. 15%?
That's, yeah, man.
They're going to get waxed. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. My God. All right.
Yeah.
Rush yards a game at home, 210. On the road, 122. Passing touchdowns thrown at home, 15 for Mr. Jackson Dart, who is having a nice season as a 65% passer. On the road, just 3-3 games. Number of sacks allowed, Ole Miss has allowed just 7 sacks in 6 home games. They have allowed 13-3 away games, 4 sacks allowed against Tulane, 5 sacks allowed against Bama, and 4 sacks allowed against Auburn. I did a little Twitter Spaces thing last night with a Ole Miss writer, and actually got to kind of ask him some questions about this game. And, you know, they've had some offensive line struggles and issues, you know, and that continues, I think, to be the case for them whenever they play a good defensive line. The strength of this OL, according to him, is really sort of the middle three there with the center and the 2 guards. And then it seems like the tackles are kind of the weak spot. That matches sort of the profile of that Florida offensive line that Georgia was able to have so much success with a couple weeks ago. Missouri was obviously very good on the edges, as we saw. So I think that's good news for the Bulldogs. Last little fun stat for you guys on our friend Mr. Jackson Dart. When taking pass attempts inside the red zone, 14-28 for 108 yards. So that's a 50% completion. Just 3.9 yards per attempt in the red zone. And 4 of his sacks this season have been in the red zone. So point being there, I think that this is an offense that moves the ball very well between the 20s. They are very, very reliant on play action. Like 46, 47% of his dropbacks have been off play action. So when the field shrinks, I think that's a good thing for Georgia, because Georgia's struggled at times with their red zone defense, to be frank.
You know what, Graham? You make me sick. You come on here with all those stats, and I was digging all day, man. I was digging. I said, you know, I'm going to come on here, and I'm gonna impress Foss.
You got Graham. Something. I know you got something. Let's
man,
go.
This is all I got now. You done ripped through everything I got. It's the only thing I was left with. I left with bones, man, like chicken bones and fish bones. The most hot – they're highly penalized team, 117th in the nation. That's the last thing I got. 7.33 a game. Now you're coming into Athens, 7 p.m., night game. The only thing that can dampen the sound is going to be the actual rain, and hopefully that holds off. But that crowd gets loose. Mm-hmm. And the way that this crowd can light up that, you know, light up Sanford Stadium and really get this team rattled, I don't see. I mean, when you look at the stats,
it can be.
Yes, they put up some points. They can move the rock. There's no doubt about it. You know, Lane Kiffin's going to be very creative. He's going to be one of those guys going to scheme up a lot of different things. But at the very same time, when they get off that bus, like Faw said, it's going to have Ole Miss across the chest. And this team has been, 59th ranked defense. There's a lot of things where they're mid, but they're just so explosive offensively, it keeps them in games. But defensively, they're very mid. And, you know, a lot of transfers that are coming in, they're still working through a lot of those things. I mean, those are things that are a work in progress, but they haven't played a lot of great teams at the same time. So they're kind of getting through games by the skin of their teeth. But it's going to be a very – I don't know. I'll go ahead, Foss.
I wasn't aware of the forecast, but if it's something like what you think it may be, That could be a problem. I could see it being like Tennessee last year. I went to that game. It was wet. It was just kind of icky, and that stadium was rocking.
That's what they need. Yeah.
It was rocking. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it could be, we can be looking forward to a similar game as that one.
I do have one last padlock stat for you, Lamar. Our Georgia Bulldogs are now first nationally in third down conversion percentage on offense at 56.3%. Wow. Ole Miss, yeah.
36% on defense.
I got them at 85th nationally on third down.
85th nationally. That's right. Yep. But 36%. Right. There you go. So I
got you.
I was right there with you.
And they're 111th. On third downs on offense.
Oh, you really?
That's what's interesting. What Lamar just said about like
feast or famine,
very explosive.
Yes,
and they're very explosive on early downs. But I have some concerns for them if they're not able to hit big plays.
What's the you know, it's not my wheelhouse. What's the spread?
Oh. Georgia's favored by like 10.5 currently.
Yeah. It was at 11 earlier today. It kind of dipped down to 10.5.
I'm kind of tempted to hammer that if we're going to be honest about it.
I think we beat them by more than that.
You can give your predictions already. You can go ahead and go into your predictions. If you think we're going to beat them, you know, just beat them down. Which is,
I want to hear Foss first.
41-17.
Oh, I'm kind of with him, man. Look, you know, I think the thing
I don't trust him. Tulane had you tucking your tail
up on the. Yeah, no, they. I think Ole Miss is a. And I don't mean this in like a way that's really like intended to be rude or anything, but like. I think that Ole Miss is a, they're an 8-4 kind of team that's had really good late game luck, and you know, and sometimes you make your own luck in football, obviously, but statistically speaking, they're not, you know, what you would expect an 8-1 SEC West team to look like. Alabama held them to 10 points in Tuscaloosa, and I can't really get over that. I can't also get over the fact that, you know, Ole Miss, I mean, like, they played a 7-point game against Arkansas. They played a 7-point game against Auburn. They had to come from behind late to beat Texas A&M last week. And credit to them for making the plays to win those games. I just think that, like, this is a great scenario for Georgia because they're going to get credit for beating the number 9 team in the country. But I don't think Ole Miss is really the number 9 team in the country. I'm going to say Georgia. I think Georgia.
Let me, before you go, before, so I won't, I'm going to repeal.
Oh,
my. Because we were talking Tennessee game, right? Mm-hmm. From last year. That game should have or could have been worse than what it was.
Much.
And it wasn't because it was what Kirby Smart wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. You know, take care of business. You see they can't score. Let's, on offense, take this clock down. You know, get out of here with a win and move on to the next game. So I feel like this has the potential to be that type of game. So I'm going to bring my number down, my 41 down to maybe about, let's say 30. I say 35-17. Like it can, you know, but I can easily see Kirby. If this game looks like what it could be, we're just trying to get out of there. You know, especially if it's wet and rainy, don't want to get injuries, all that stuff. I can see it being a game where we're just trying to get out of there with a win.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I'm looking at the that's Athens, Greece, not Athens, Georgia. Yeah, you know, you're right, Lamar. It's the chance of rain is looking more and more likely.
60%. Yeah.
At 42 to 49% from 7 to 10 PM. Yeah, I think you get a sloppy one. But you know, I don't know. I still think that Georgia will score in this game. Kirby likes Lane. Lane likes Kirby. You know, they worked together at Alabama for a long time. So, like, I don't think there's going to be any, you know, desire to run shit up or anything like that. But I think that Georgia's defense is going to have a good day. You know, Jackson Dart's legs scare me a little bit. But, you know, I think where Georgia's gotten in trouble this year is not so much been against mobile quarterbacks. It's been against mobile quarterbacks who they didn't expect to be mobile. And I think you know what's coming. You know, the design quarterback run and the scrambles is part of what they do on offense. I like Georgia 41. Well, let's hold on. I'm gonna say Georgia 38, Ole Miss 20.
Last week was the perfect game to prepare for Lane Kiffin and a running quarterback. So the adjustment that was made in the second half will be the adjustment that you see in the first half. Going into Foss's thought of going in, kicking their teeth in, and then getting out healthy is the perfect way that I was thinking about it. Before the rain, I had a complete blowout. I mean, a complete blowout. I'm talking 55-10, something like that, where the backups get in. I'm still going to say 45-17. I'm still going to say that. When you look at, when you know, every week we throw out stats, or Graham, you'll throw out stats, and sometimes people don't pay attention to that, but you got to. And you also got to do something with what we call the eye test. Mm-hmm. This is a team that, yes, they have a lot of athletes, they have a lot of ability, but they're very inconsistent. And especially on that defensive side of the ball, they give up a lot of yards. And they get stood up more. You know, we talk about our defensive line that was getting stood up. These jokers are getting stood up every week. They got a lot of long-rangey cornerbacks. Deuce talked about it, you know, older DBs that can actually hang with some receivers for a little while, but they can't hang with them forever. And Georgia has enough guys that they can continue to throw at you. I also believe they don't have the linebackers that can stay with Georgia's tight ends. And anything that's in the slot, Georgia's going to murder. If Beck is on and that ball's not wet and slippery and these guys actually hold on to the ball and take care of it, it can get nasty and get nasty fast. I was dead on last week, and I was watching Mizzou, but I like Mizzou's team much better than what I like Ole Miss going into this game. So, like I said, 45-17. I'm going to stick with that regardless of the rain or not. If it holds off, blow out.
If it holds off, I think Georgia scores 50. Man.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's really, really bad, kind of like what Foss said, they kind of shut it down a little bit, just like it was at Tennessee. You know, stay safe, stay healthy, get ready to go play Tennessee next week and get out of here with a clean bill of health. But that's the predictions. Before we go, there's a couple other big games, though. I just want to get your thoughts on this one, man. Tennessee and Missouri, what you got?
Missouri.
It's at Mizzou. And Tennessee minus one or Mizzou plus one.
Give me Missouri, man. I trust Missouri staff. I think that's a good football team. They did not back down for a second last week in Athens, and I think they'll play well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that game was going to blow open, it never did.
Mm-hmm. I got Mizzou. I just think that they'll have something to prove after losing to Georgia, you know, something that they want to hang their hat on and build upon. Again, they still got some guys they're going after recruiting wise, and just like Deuce talked about controlling Mississippi in terms of recruiting, Missouri's trying to control Missouri. They're trying to control the Midwest and bring people to that university, and they got the money and they've been ponying it up to get guys there. The second game, which is the only other game I want to talk about, Michigan and Penn State. What are your thoughts there? Plus 4.5. Penn State, the game is at Penn State. Graham, I know you got some type of Penn State, alum around the house somewhere.
Yeah, I got one. Try not to tell people about it.
Don't do that, bro.
Look, man, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think all this stuff that's been going on with the Connor Stallions and all this Harbaugh crap, I think it's a distraction. And I think that Michigan, great, man. You guys have dominated Purdue and Indiana and a bunch of other garbage teams. And having a weak schedule, it can be helpful sometimes, right? Like it can help you get off to the season, you know, ease into some things. If guys aren't healthy, like it can be an advantage. But eventually, I think it becomes a detriment to your football team when it hasn't been tested. And this football team has not been tested, and we're going into the 10th game of the season. And I think that it might be a little bit too late to form that identity. And so I saw Penn State do some things. I didn't think Drew Allar was that good, but they've kind of tweaked some things. I think they got some stuff schemed up for him now that's working. It's kind of unlocked him a little bit and made him comfortable. I think Penn State pulls off the shocker. And I mean, Vegas, I don't think this is even a touchdown spread. Like Vegas.
4.5.
Yeah. All right. So give me Penn State straight up. I got the Nittany Lions. I think they win by, a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. What you got, Foss?
Being at Penn State, I think Penn State gets them. If they can whoop Penn State, I think I'm inclined to call them legit, you know, if they can whoop. I mean, whoop them though. And on the road, it means they're legit.
I was trying to see. Okay, this is a 12 o'clock game. If it was a night game, I would pick Penn State easily. I mean, that's a nightmare to play when it's a whiteout and it's cold. It's getting it's cold and wet in November. I've been up there. I'm still going with the upset. Graham, I am actually becoming a Penn State fan just for 3.5 hours.
Let's do it, bro. We ride together.
I can't stand Michigan, man. I can't stand Harbaugh. His smugness, the way that he's handling this. I mean, just get out in front of it, man. Just say, look, we had boys deployed all over the place trying to get some, you know, trying to catch up to the rest of college football. Just say that. But I think, really, Drew Allar, I think him playing Ohio State early at Ohio State, his first time big matchup, allowed him to kind of get his feet wet for big time ball and what it's going to take to actually win. I think Penn State knows what they have. And like you mentioned, Michigan has not played anybody really this year, and this is their first time in a first test where you got four stars and five stars look just like you. The only difference is who's going to become more prepared and who's going to be more prepared. And I think they are distracted, but I'm going to go Penn State with the outright upset in this game. I think college football needs it just to kind of get Michigan out of the crosshairs of everything else is going on. Just get them up out of there. You know, let Florida State and Washington, the teams that appear to be, you know, doing things the right way, get in there and get an opportunity to get their teeth kicked in too by them dogs. But it is what it is. But that's where I'm going to go. But fellas, great show. Always enjoy seeing y'all, obviously, of course. Anybody else got anything else before we get up out of here and before, you know, Foss comes on the next show and says what he always says. But anything else? Anything else?
No, sir.
Nothing else, man.
No, sir.
Go Dawgs.
Go, sir. No, sir. All right. And as always, you know what it is. Go Dawgs.
Yes, Dawgs. Sir.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.